You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
History Bay. Welcome to the podcast. I'm Corey.
I'm Jen. And we are the Art History Babes.
We are. And we just got back from, oh, there's some birds going off.
As soon as we started, hold on 1 minute.
I don't know if y'all were able to, if that got picked up or not, but they had some words. They had some things to say.
Yeah, as soon as we said we are the Art History Babes, they were like, and we're the lads, the art history lads.
We just got back from our Mexico trip, and we're not going to go too much into it because the whole goal of this episode is just a short, fun little episode to get out to you guys. But I did just want to say that it was a really wonderful experience, and just thank you to everyone who joined us. Like, what a dream. Y'all all were just incredible. Such cool people. Like, so many cool people that we got to explore Mexico City and Oaxaca with. And we're all dealing with like post-trip hangovers right now. Not like hangovers in terms of like alcohol hangovers, but like hangovers, just like wishing, you know, the take me back feelings for sure.
Yeah, I'm experiencing some post-trip depression for sure. We will absolutely do a Art History Babes Do Mexico episode, and we'll have something fun for you all, and especially for our lovely fans who came on the trip with us. So look forward to that. However, this ain't it.
What is this, Jen? What are we doing?
All right. So today we just wanted to do something fun, and we're just, you know, Corey and I were texting, and Corey found this video that just really sparked our interest. And she said, what if we did an episode on these hungry boys? And so those hungry boys are medieval hellmouths.
Hellmouth!
Hellmouth.
So we're going to chat about hellmouths, which are just a very fun... it's just real fun. just a really good time. A creature, a figure that is seen, yeah, in a lot of medieval artwork, but it's also, it pops up in a lot of places. Ultimately, a hellmouth is a depiction of the entrance to hell, but that entrance, instead of being a doorway, is like a big old mouth, usually of some kind of demon or creature. A lot of them have almost like canine-like features. Some have like dragon-like features. They can look a lot of different ways, but it is typically representing a group of people, often just being sucked up by a big old mouth as the entrance to hell.
Yeah, so as far as hungry boys go, these are some real hungry boys. Medieval depictions of hell are pretty interesting because around the time of really the solidification of Christianity is when we start to see these images of what would hell look like? More than the solidification of Christianity was the creation of hell, because hell is not something that is found in Hebrew texts. Hell was not even in the Old Testament. Hell was a relatively modern invention. And if you go back and listen to our episode on the devil, you will find that the devil was also a relatively modern invention as far as ideas of good and evil and heaven and hell. So like the big dichotomies that shape Western Christian thought. And so what better way to scare a largely illiterate population than by showing them horrific scenes of what hell would look like?
It's so funny too that that was the purpose of a lot of these drawings, because from our context, from year 2022, like so many of them are so silly looking, you know, like so many of them are so playful looking, but there was definitely a strike the fear of God in you kind of intention. A lot of these hell mouths were found in prayer books, so it was very much like the goal was like, go to church or you're gonna get eaten, and you don't want to get eaten. And additionally, like these images were found, they were found in prayer books, but they were also found in like medieval theatrical productions. These like giant mechanical mouths that would like literally eat you, which is super fun. Like, love that. So yeah, you kind of see almost as this ultimate scare tactic, this idea of just being eaten as like, I don't know, like an ultimate fear.
Yeah. The concept of being eaten, obviously, I think that harkens back to our reptile brains. Don't get eaten. That's a real innate human instinct. But there's also kind of the symbolism of being like consumed by sin. And, you know, don't allow yourself to be consumed by sin, because you will then be consumed by the devil. And it's funny because a lot of these images, you're meant to believe that the devil, or who we think is the devil, is the hellmouth, is the monster that's consuming the people. But some representations of hellmouths show the Antichrist or Lucifer or what have you, the false prophet, will show that representation in the hellmouth as well. So he's also being given his divine judgment. So do we want to talk a little bit about the origins of the hellmouth imagery?
Yeah, let's do it. Like most imagery, most symbols, there are an array of origins. There are a lot of different ideologies, cultures you can kind of connect to this hellmouth image. One of the big ones is they are thought to have a Norse origin, particularly connection to dragons. As I said, a lot of times hellmouths kind of have like a dragony look. I feel like this image that I have pulled up, they've got some dragon vibes. It's the Abingdon Apocalypse. Hellmouth consisting of three beasts, a devil, and many souls inside. It's a fun one because there's like triple hellmouth going on here. And I love this little guy in the corner too. I don't know what he's about, but I feel like they have a very like dragon like appearance to them. They're green, and yeah, they kind of have that like dragon nose. Another potential connection to Norse mythology is the great wolf Fenrir. So, like I said, a lot of these hellmouths kind of look almost like dogs or wolves. And so there's a connection there to Norse mythology. Another potential origin for the hellmouths, or just a connection, would be ancient Egyptian mythology, specifically Ammit, who was known as the devourer of the dead. Ammit was a goddess in ancient Egyptian religion that was a combination of a lion, a hippo, and then had the head of a crocodile. And once again, I think the head of a crocodile imagery, very similar to dragons. So you're kind of seeing that connection. And yeah, it also liked to eat. It liked to eat.
Right. And connecting to the good and evil dichotomy in Christian philosophy, the heart of the dead in Egyptian religion is weighed against the feather of Ma'at, and any heart deemed heavier than the feather is impure. So that person committed a lot of sins or just, you know, sucked. And so then the heart is then devoured by this goddess. And then, you know, it's kind of fun to think about this combination monster, because, you know, what are you going to get eaten by in Egypt? An alligator or a lion or a hippo? Yep. So pretty good.
Put them all together. No, it is. It's pretty, like, it's pretty straightforward. But yeah, like similar to, I think, a lot of like the Christian theology, especially the Christian theology that was, you know, being pushed with the hell mouths. Yeah, it is this. It's judgment, right? It's the moment of judgment. Like you're literally walking through a threshold into hell being eaten. So it's a very similar idea repackaged.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
Sephora stores are everywhere you are, so just pop in when you need a brown lip to match your 90s playlist, a confidence boost before your interview, or a last-minute gift for mom's birthday. There's always a Sephora near you. Just pop in. Use our store locator to find your local Sephora or Sephora at Kohl's.
All right, so we've talked about the origins of the hellmouth imagery in Anglo-Saxon art as well as in ancient Egyptian art. There's even some references to some kind of hellmouth character and examples seen from like Indonesia even. And so this imagery is very pervasive as far as what happens to the bad people after we die. And so really, though, the hellmouth finds its greatest expression in medieval manuscripts and early depictions of hell. And so there are a lot of really interesting ones where the hellmouth is given animal properties, but also is not really made to look like any kind of animal you would see. What we're seeing is like a almost like a cauldron of flames and writhing bodies. What, you know, a couple teeth here and there.
It's a big soup.
It's a soup of bad people.
Yeah, a soup of sinners, if you will.
Mm-hmm. And so in this historical context, like we said, there's the need to illustrate hell for people who otherwise wouldn't know much about it because they don't read. And so that really takes us through some of the early medieval imagery all the way up until around the 14th to 15th centuries. The hellmouth really sort of peaks in representation and then wanes a little bit. And we see a couple of examples that are most notable, at least in my book, which would be, I think the big one is from Hieronymus Bosch and his depictions of hell. And so this particular painting that we're talking about is called Christ Breaking Down the Gates of Hell. It's either by Hieronymus Bosch or by one of his homies an imitator. But this image is really incredible. And Hieronymus Bosch is just incredible. So the Northern Netherlandish artist sort of revamped the Hellmouth imagery in the very early stages of the Northern Renaissance. Let's break down this image a little bit. So the Hellmouth here is a man.
That is a man. Well, it's a man that is also entirely a head with limbs.
I love this image. So it's thought that Hieronymus Bosch and his depictions of hell and the hell mouths that he had painted were almost, some would consider to be self-portraits. He liked to insert himself in some of his works. And in this particular painting, yeah, he's a head with little arms and legs. And he's kind of holding his mouth open with these weird little hands, which is just like grotesque, but hilarious. And what you see is just a sea of writhing bodies. People just in various stages of torture in hell. In the back are some pretty gruesome bodies hanging in flames, and in the bottom left side of the painting you see Christ storming in, ready to break down hell, bring his acolytes out from, I don't know, purgatory, since presumably hell is after you go through the mouth. So we can take this imagery to be that the people that still haven't gone in are in some kind of limbo.
Good logic. That's solid logic.
You know, I thought of it and I said it because that's just what I thought. Yeah, so Northern Renaissance painters brought back some hellmouth imagery. We have a couple of examples of engravings from Peter Bruegel the Elder. Those are kind of fun. Again, in this particular engraving, we have a hellmouth in the bottom left of the work, and people that are being brought out. Once again, Christ is shown at the base of the hellmouth, kind of, I don't know, last minute savior activity, bringing back people from the brink of hell.
Yeah, I think specifically these scenes with, yeah, Christ basically coming to the rescue last minute. There is, I'm not a biblical scholar, so I don't know the specifics, but there is like a biblical story in which after he died, after he was crucified, before he came back, he made a pit stop. He like stopped by hell real quick and like tried to save some people. At least I think that's the story. So I think that's what's being represented in a lot of these hell mouth depictions where, yeah, we do. We have Christ coming in hot, like, I'm going to save you from this hungry boy. And that's apparently what he did before he came back to life, before he resurrected.
Well, that was cool of him. yeah, so some of these engravings are really phenomenal. And yeah, there's one by Albrecht Dürer with a hell mouth right in the bottom right corner with a big snout. And so,
oh, I love a snout.
I love his snout. And these little folks are being pulled in by a chain, and there's the little other pokey boys in hell, little demons. Poking fellows into the hellmouth. And so these examples, they kind of reach their peak in the middle or in medieval times, sort of wane, come back a little bit in the early Renaissance. And then finally, one of the last, I would say one of the last most notable hellmouth paintings was by El Greco in a mural that he completed in 1578, the Adoration of the Name of Jesus. So El Greco paints in his typical El Greco fashion, some real long spindly fellows on the left side of the panel. Everyone is in deep adoration of Christ and of Christian stuff. And those who do not adhere to the adoration of Christ are shown being pushed into this kind of almost like a rat hell mouth here in the corner.
Look at his little nose,
but like big huge scary teeth. And in this hell mouth you can see the perspective, because by, you know, we're dealing with perspective here in the late 1500s, so you can see that there is like a deep space in the hell mouth. So that's pretty—
the hell mouth is infinite. That would be a ominous tattoo, or maybe a bumper sticker, perhaps.
The hell mouth is infinite while stuck in traffic. On that's how I feel, right? You know, driving in California.
Yeah. So hell mouths, we love them. One just very contemporary connection that you may have made, many people have been making it, particularly conspiracy theorists. There has been use of the hellmouth imagery with Travis Scott's Astroworld, which is fucking cool imagery. Like, I'm not going to deny it's a really cool use of the image. It's on the album cover. But unfortunately, there was the tragedy at Astroworld in which 10 people passed away and it was awful. And of course, that leads people to look for answers. And we're living in a time just ripe with conspiracies. And this, you know, like, this is a pretty direct line to anyone who wants to jump on satanic panic, basically. And plenty of people are, plenty of people did. I haven't heard, it's been a while since this happened. So I don't know if people are still like caught up on this idea or not. But yeah, right now Jen just pulled up a side by side compare and contrast of the Astroworld festival gates being Travis Scott's head with a kind of gaping mouth, and then Hieronymus Bosch, the our little hell mouth man, and people were definitely using that as proof that the tragedy that occurred was some type of satanic ritual. You know, I'm not going to tell anyone what to believe, but personally, I think it was in no way a satanic ritual, just good old-fashioned capitalism that led to this tragedy. It was just oversight and people caring about money more than human lives. But I suppose if you want to go down the hellmouth rabbit hole, that's yours, your choice. You get to do that.
Yeah, and let's be clear. I think that 100% Travis Scott, and if not Travis Scott, at least his promoters and the people who put on this Astroworld show, the imagery of the Hellmouth is 100% there, and it wasn't just by accident. Absolutely, they were looking at old examples from medieval and some of this Flemish painting, which is just badass. It's just really cool to look at. And I think that there was certainly a element to the pyrotechnics and all of that that were for sure meant to elicit like this aura of being transported to another place, entering through the mouth, being in this immersive experience. I've seen some imagery of like what the concert was like, and the big sort of what they were saying the portal to hell was, which is what he had on stage, the big sort of the big circular lights that were behind him on stage. Which some have also likened to CERN, the particle collider, and said that it looks like the particle collider, and that actually the particle collider in Switzerland has opened up a portal to hell, and that they were doing a human sacrifice to Shiva, the god of destruction.
Oh my.
I'm getting carried away.
Yeah, I haven't heard the CERN connection, but I'm like, of course, like, of course, of course. Like, it's that's the thing about conspiracy theories. It's fucking there if you want it to be there, and you can like go down these rabbit holes. But I 100% agree with you that this imagery was intentional, and it was connected to art history. Like, it was connected to history, and it was sending a message. I do not think that there was a ritual sacrifice, but I do think that the vibe of the whole thing was orchestrated 100%.
Yeah. And to be clear, I do not believe that there was a human sacrifice. And I also don't believe that CERN has opened a portal to hell. Can they create mini black holes at CERN? It is yet to be determined. But that's a real thing.
Yeah,
but
it is.
But no, this is a testament to how this imagery has prevailed in our society. It's still extremely powerful. And while we're looking back at images from the 1300s and going like, oh, look at the little, you know, they're fun and the little people are writhing and haha, that's because we're here at the Art History Babes podcast, not devout Christians who would see imagery of hell and feel truly frightened. This is not to say that people do not still see this imagery and think that's evil, that's scary, and that's what it was meant to evoke. And so it's very powerful, powerful imagery, and it continues to be so because literally the Travis Scott concert was not that long ago, and the first thing that we saw were people juxtaposing imagery with Hieronymus Bosch and other examples of hellmouth imagery in medieval art. So still very powerful imagery. So medieval artists, y'all were on to something.
Certainly, certainly powerful. But I also think, to add on to that, it's a great example of how your beliefs and your perception shape how you take something in. Because you're right, like, if you are someone who has certain beliefs and, you know, believes in hell and thinks a certain way about Judgment Day, pretty scary. If you're someone who has a different belief system that doesn't really operate according to that, like, you know, we've talked about Hieronymus Bosch. We've talked about some of these kinds of images, and like, to us, they're very absurd and kind of funny, you know, and it's all because imagery, content, everything is fully shaped by your perception. Likewise, yeah, the Travis Scott thing is going to be shaped by your perception and your beliefs. And that's just the way it is. You know, there's no there's no easy or 100% like correct way to look at these images at all. They are infinitely fascinating, that's for sure. They continue on and continue to be powerful images because they have a lot to offer. In my opinion, not because they say anything concrete or black and white about humanity or the afterlife, but they just have a lot to offer in how we consider something as complex as like the underworld and the afterlife, you know? Which brings me to my last little thing I just kind of wanted to touch on, which is that these hellmouths, as we've mentioned, ultimately, whether you look at them, like, if you want to look at them in this strict Christian context or just look at them in a bigger sense, they really express this fear of being eaten. I really liked, Jen, what you said about the, when we talked about the Egyptian roots and how it's an alligator, a lion, and a hippopotamus. Like, you will literally get eaten by those three animals. Like, there's a primal fear of being eaten. And I think it's interesting that in the Christian context, it became this preoccupation with this idea of either the devil or demons eating us. But at the core of it, yeah, it's this fear of being eaten, which immediately connects to cannibalism and the concept of being eaten just by something, specifically these images where it looks like a man, like a weird little man, like this Hieronymus Bosch, where he's a weird. I also wanted to bring up in the Hieronymus Bosch one, he looks unamused. He looks so, his eyes are literally drifting off into the corners. He's like, come into my mouth. Like, he just looks so unamused. So I think there is this, like, I don't know, there's something so at the core of our survival is like eating, and also at the core of our survival is not being eaten. And I think if anything else, like, that's a takeaway here for me. like there's something very visceral there, just that, like, whether it's Christian, whether it, like, doesn't matter the belief system, it's the eating, it's the being chewed up, it's the consuming something for energy that I think is really fascinating, and like the preoccupation with that. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. It makes sense. I think that these images are so powerful because they hearken to primal fears. And at the end of the day, we are ruled by them.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to quickly note, I'm sure some of you are listening to this episode and you're going, why haven't they talked about Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Hellmouth? Because I didn't watch the show, so I don't know anything about it. So if you were hoping we were going to get into some Buffy, I'm sorry.
Dude, this is probably going to come as a huge surprise to a lot of people, but me either.
Right.
I somehow haven't watched Buffy, and honestly, I'm like, I'm gonna do it, like, I'm gonna just go through it all, like, it's so on brand for me, like, but for some reason, I don't know, I think I was just busy those years. I think I was just really busy and wasn't watching as much TV, because like, it's a show that, like, I'm like, yeah, it checks a lot of boxes for me. But yeah, I haven't done the Buffy thing either. So sorry.
Thank you for listening to our episode on Hellmouths. I hope that you enjoyed. Please stay tuned when we really get into the nitty gritty of our Mexico trip. And to those of you who went to Mexico with us, we just wanted to extend a heartfelt, we love you. We had so much fun.
Truly, y'all are the best. Just such an absolutely amazing, cool thing to get to meet up with, like, what was it? Like 15 random people in Mexico. And then they all ended up being just
incredible,
incredible people. Just so much fun. Thank you for, you know, going out on a limb and joining us for this trip. We loved it. Y'all are wonderful. And yeah, hopefully we can do something like it again, and even more of you can join. Thank you for listening. Until next time. Bye.
Peace.
History made.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.